I'm Elisa Ghirardelli, and I'm very, very excited to be here to share with you about a project that we have in the Network for Healthy California, and that's in the California Department of Public Health. And our project is called CX3, and that is for communities of excellence in nutrition, physical activity, and obesity prevention. So to define CX3, basically it documents the physical environment and empowers local action to change the environment to support individual behaviors. It's a planning model that involves assessing communities in relation to a variety of obesity prevention benchmarks known as community indicators and assets, and I'll tell you a little bit about those in a minute. We base this project on the California Tobacco Control Section and their successes with the initiative CX, which is just communities of excellence. So basically, we added the three on top of that, which is nutrition, physical activity, and obesity prevention. So we have these standardized indicators and assets. The indicators are organized into six community environments, and right now we've been able to develop the neighborhood environment. The assets are organized into three areas. And these indicators and assets were developed from hundreds of indicators that were drawn from the literature and then evaluated to look at feasibility and quality as indicators for communities of excellence by many different professionals within California and some from across the country to come up with basically what we call our top picks. And so those top picks are what we've been able to develop tools and methods from to be able to assess those indicators. And right now, like I mentioned, we're working in the neighborhood environment. So our goals are basically to empower communities. We want to assess a community's strengths, assets, their gaps, and their weaknesses. We want to use evidence-based priority setting, then to develop strategic, local, data-driven action plans and educational strategies. We hope to broaden participation at the local level and to then be able to evaluate progress over time. Not only to be able to use the tools and methods that we have to evaluate the communities by looking at them within 3 years, but we also do case studies as well to be able to get more information as to what's actually happening on the ground. And then we want to generate local policy action. That's really one of our main goals. So in California, we have 61 local health departments. 58 of those are counties and 3 of those are cities. We are implementing with the Network for Healthy California, and in 2006, we started with 6 pilot sites, and then we've added in 2007, 16 additional sites. But we've also been able to have the opportunity to train the California Endowment sites, which are 12 sites that are mini-grant funded sites, as well as the Central California Regional Obesity Prevention Projects, which they call CCROPs. So basically, we have trained over half of the health departments in California with our tools and methods. And these range from a variety of environments, dense, urban, suburban, rural, and remote areas. So within a Network for Healthy California, our sites choose 3 to 6 low-income neighborhoods. And each of those neighborhoods are comprised of 1 to 5 census tracts. We use census tracts as our unit of measure because basically our funding stream requires that we have more than 50% of the population in those census tracts at or below 185% of the federal poverty level. And then the neighborhoods, the local sites actually use other selection factors to choose their neighborhoods. So maybe established partnerships, racial ethnic makeup, if they're rural or urban, if they want to compare those two. And then one of the sites that we've worked with used actually obesity rates. So within the neighborhood environment, the first step that we take is mapping. So we look at access to supermarkets, and specifically we use the markets with more than 20 employees. So we use that measure because we looked at store type to be able to identify those large supermarkets, and that was really not predictive within the GIS database that we were using. So we found that we were able to look at full-service supermarkets as through looking at the number of employees that they had. We look at a half-mile service area, so we use a buffer to give us basically a crow flies access within a walkable distance of those supermarkets. But we also have a great tool that we just got on our new GIS. It's a new tool on our GIS, and we're able to do a measure tool where you can do basically walking and take into account any barriers that might be there, so looking at the distance that way. We also look at transit to supermarkets. And then we look at farmers markets, and then looking at those farmers markets to assess if they are accepting EBT, WIC, or senior vouchers. We additionally look at the density of fast food, and we look at fast food chains, non-chains, pizza, and deli. So we do all this through the use of an online GIS map viewer. Now, this map viewer was developed in 2003 and houses over 100 layers on it. And we are adding additional layers based on what databases that we want to use to be able to map those and basically use GIS, take databases and then geocode those to our locations on the map. And then the second part of CX3 right now within the neighborhood food environment, with the neighborhood environment, is using field surveys. So we actually go on the ground. We go into grocery stores and small markets, and we look at the availability and the quality of fruits and vegetables and other healthy foods. We look at fruit and vegetable pricing, and we look at the marketing of healthy and unhealthy foods. We look at the exterior of the markets and the storefront, as well as looking at the interior of the markets. And specifically, we look at around the counter. So at the checkout counter, we look within 6 feet of that counter to see what's going on in terms of the marketing, but also product placement. So we also look at fast food around the schools. So within those fast food outlets around the schools, what's the availability of healthy food options? What is the menu labeling that's going on? What kind of marketing is happening? Again, on the exterior and in the interior. And additionally, we look at the outdoor marketing around schools, so billboards, sandwich boards, all kinds of outdoor marketing. So we took some of our pilot projects and pulled their data together to be able to look at some of the conditions just as kind of a roadmap to see what was going on in those 22 low-income neighborhoods. And we found that when we looked at the number of registers to be able to give us an idea of store size, we found that most of the large stores, as you can imagine, have much better availability, with a lot of them having more than seven or more types, and the smaller stores having more limited availability, with most of them having 1 to 3 types or none. We also, of those stores that do carry produce, we looked at their quality, and we found that 38 to 42% of those small stores, all or most of the fruits and vegetables were poor quality. So that was a real indicator to us that quality is a big issue within those small markets that carry produce. So we look at unhealthy marketing at the checkout. We found that small stores, the inescapable cues in small stores are there, and those are typically what you find in low-income neighborhoods. So these residents are exposed to these inescapable cues when they are going through the checkout, and compared to in the large stores. We looked at the number of stores that have bars on their windows. We use bars on the windows to give us sort of an indicator of neighborhood safety, because we've been finding that it's really difficult to obtain crime statistics at the local level. And so this is kind of a proxy for us in terms of neighborhood safety. And we found that among those 22 low-income neighborhoods, 45% of them had bars on the windows. And it was a range from like 20% in one of our counties to over 80% in one of our other counties. And then we looked at, we found only 24% of those large stores, so the big supermarkets that have 4 or more registers, have health promotions around their fruit and vegetables displays. And when you add the small markets in there, it dropped to 12%. So this is a real area that can be focused on in terms of promoting those fruits and vegetables. So and then with the fast food environment, we found that 77% of the fast food chains have ads on their roofs and walls. So that's like this in-your-face marketing that's going on the entire building. And we found that 54% of the other non-chains have that type of advertising going on. So that gives you an idea of basically when we take a look at our pilot data all together. But what is the centerpiece of CX3, and we feel like is a really key component to it, is that our locals get their own data on the local level, where they're able to compare their neighborhoods side by side. So they get basically what we call a neighborhood profile. So they can look at their neighborhoods and say, which neighborhood do we feel like is a neighborhood that really could use interventions? Or they can decide, hey, this is an issue in all our neighborhoods. Let's develop something that we can cross all of the neighborhoods. So it really gives them a good idea based on their data to come up with their priorities and their action planning. We've added some new features to our neighborhood profile recently. And within our survey, we've added the new WIC package foods. We've collaborated with our sisters at WIC, and we've looked at the foods that are going to be added to that package, and we've put them on our survey. So we're very excited to see what's going to come from that. And we've specifically been looking at what kinds of nutrition information is in those fast food restaurants to see what's happening in terms of menu labeling, that kind of thing. We've developed a scoring system, and this is a very exciting part for us. We've got where stores can basically get up to 100 points for their score, and fast food outlets can get up to 50 points. And then we have quality standards that has been informed by the locals that we've worked with to give us weighted standards for each of those areas within our surveys that are corresponding to the scores. What we find from locals that have been working with this is that they really value the fact that they can use visual as well as numeric information to represent their neighborhood conditions. So they not only can use maps and photos, but then they have hard data from their local environment to be able to present a compelling picture. We also provide a little bit of guidance. We work with our local projects to give them guidance and on interventions relevant to their funding stream. We encourage community empowerment and priority setting with a process that we outline for them. All our data variables have local policy implications. So we've tied everything into something that is actually actionable. And those things are from like land use to signage ordinances to menu labeling, but also to education and those kinds of and marketing and all kinds of different things that they can actually take action on. We provide consultation from the Public Health Law and Policy group at the Public Health Institute, so they have access to that group to be able to inform their action. And then we also provide consultation from a communications firm, so that can assist them with media and data sharing for their local community action. So specifically, public health law and policy is becoming something that's very exciting and really helps the locals to vision what they can do with the data that they've collected. And we have them present to the projects on some of the opportunities that they can take, specifically things that are education and or voluntary action, so, you know, real kind of touchy-feely things that are soft. Or they can go into policy, like land use, general planning, zoning, design guidelines, those kinds of actionable items. And they also, anything with economic development. They can work on enforcement of existing policy or targeting designated redevelopment zones. So our action is growing. We're seeing things happen. We're getting some case studies back. And we're hearing from our projects about some of the things that they're doing. One of our counties, Kern County, they developed a city task force in one of their cities, the city of Delano, and they're using their data. But they've also done really basic things using their data, like linking consumers with information on alternative food sources, because we also have them gather alternative food sources, things like community-supported agriculture and community gardens and things like that. So they created a list to be able to share with their locals. And then also in West Oakland, we had a youth project that they developed a cleanup campaign via their park to get access to their local store. In Santa Clara, which is another one of our projects, they used promotoras within their neighborhood group to actually collect their data. So we have projects that actually do use community partners to collect data, and that was basically it was up to them to be able to decide what they wanted to do. Some projects use staff, but other ones had the community members already signed on. Specifically, Santa Clara worked with that model where they already had the community partnership with the promotoras, and then that actually really gave the promotoras the impetus to find the farmers market as the thing that there was that was their priority for changing in their neighborhood, and they're activating that at this point. So in Berkeley, which is one of our city health departments, they're developing a retail program with a local merchant as a pilot project to be able to move out into other merchants in their neighborhoods. So this is what we'd like to see from CX3, wonderful things happening on the community level to be able to support the behaviors that we'd like to see change. So for more information, you can reach me. This is my information, but I've also provided some fact sheets on the back table and on the one outside, so if you'd like to pick up one of those to find out more about our project and get contact information, those are available to you. So. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And do you have any specific questions for Alyssa? This would be a good time to start, and then we'll open it up for all of us.
Yes, Patty. Well, we left that up to the projects, and they kind of mentioned that a little bit, that we left that up to them to be able to decide if they wanted community members to do those surveys or not. Some of the projects actually used youth to go into the stores and collect data, but other projects used staff members from the health department. It was completely up to them, but we had the range of what was going on. And we felt really good because we were able to hear that the tools and methods work pretty well for use with community members. But we heard that they really didn't have a lot of problems. We gave them a letter and some guidance to be able to make connections when they went into those stores. And generally, it was never a problem. You know, we heard that they would wear hats or put on a T-shirt or something that made them a little more friendly, that they weren't coming in for inspections or anything like that, and to sort of give a background about the project. And it seemed to work very well. We didn't really have many problems. You know, we've gotten pretty good. I mean, I think it really comes down to the training. And what we did to work with that is that we provided PowerPoints to our projects that they could modify, that taught about, basically trained on how to look at the quality of the fruits and vegetables specifically, because that was a real fuzzy area potentially. So we gave like pictures that had basically what kinds of quality items that they were looking for, but also other kinds of trainable items in terms of the tools and methods, and they really valued that. That was really good for them. So, I mean, it depended on the local project. I mean, some of the projects we had better, cleaner data come back from the community-based participatory research than compared to the health department staff. So, I mean, really, you never know. And they do have the opportunity to clean up their data. So we give that, we send them back their data with the holes of some missing data that they might have, and we give them the opportunity to fill those holes in. So, but I mean, I feel like it was pretty clean. So, yeah. I'm sorry, in the back. Not yet. We're really refining that at this point. We've gone through basically three iterations because we've had three groups that we've worked with. But you can contact me, and I'll be happy to share that when it's ready. Yes. Good question. We haven't gotten actually onto the ground yet with those because this is a brand new scoring system that we developed, and we've still been working some, kind of the kinks out. But we are giving those to the locals to make that decision on their own. If they want to share it with the stores, that's completely up to them. And some of them have talked about doing that, and some of them have talked about not doing that. So it's really up to the communities. And that's one thing that we have felt very strongly about with CX3, is that we want to leave the power within the community, community level decision making. That, you know, we provide guidance and we provide the tools and methods and the technical assistance as needed, but that really the community projects within the health departments use the data for their own decision making processes. So, any other questions? Alice? Within the stores, we stuck to small mom and pops, independent markets, and convenience stores, things that actually had a storefront. But we did take a look at the resources if they had, the community had, like, farmers markets, or if they had community-supported agriculture or community gardens. But we didn't actually assess the quality of those. We do give them the opportunity to call them up and ask them what kinds of products, and we've made that available on the tool that they have to be able to find those things in their neighborhood. But we really didn't get too deep into that, because we found with the pilot that it really didn't gain us a whole lot, because we felt like that those types of locations really varied. I mean, they really, really varied in terms of what types of products they provided. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. We don't specifically give them those connections. We leave it up to them, but we encourage that they do start making those connections. An additional piece to CX3 is that we have them take a look at their local health department infrastructure, and it's basically a questionnaire where they have to link up with some of their partners within the health department, and that really, really encourages the looking the non-silo approach. And that has we've heard from a lot of the local projects that that has really made a difference in terms of building buy-in from their health department members and working with other things within their local government and the planning departments and whatnot. So, yeah. Yes, Wendy. Good question. The local projects, when we were working on the scoring system, those health departments gave a lot of input into that scoring system, and it got a little heated at times as to where things were going to be weighted. We really put a lot of emphasis on the quality of the fruits and vegetables, because they felt like if they have fruits and vegetables, that's important, but if they do have fruits or vegetables, if they're poor quality, what's the point? So they really felt like quality was a big issue, and we put a lot of weight on terms of that and then the availability, as well as looking at pricing. So we're still kind of teasing out our pricing data right now, so I don't have any to present. But what's really exciting about our pricing data is we've been able to gather scanner data from county-level scanner data to be able to come up with mean prices for large supermarkets, and to be able to provide a comparison price on a county level basis on different sets of fruits and vegetables that they were able to collect prices on. So we're very excited about that. So that gives them a really good comparison for their county. So thank you. Thank you very much.
And we don't want to stop your questions. You're asking some very good ones, but I would like to open up the questioning for all of our presenters. For Salima, if you have some questions about the food co-op, for Brooke, for the faith-based intervention, or continue questions with Alyssa. Well, thank you all for attending the session this afternoon. I hope you will consider other food and nutrition sessions and jointly sponsored sessions. And especially I'd like to thank our three presenters for their presentations and for answering all these questions. So thank you all.